Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, a look at new developments in the search for suspects in the European terror attacks. Two analysts offer their views about talks on Syria's political future. Trade pacts are becoming a campaign issue in the U.S. And a new album coming out for Fifth Harmony.
They say this album is going to be a little different for their fans than the first album was, in that it will be more R&B, more hip-hop oriented.
It's right here on The Voice of America. Belgian police continue their searches in connection with both the Brussels and Paris terrorist attacks. Correspondent Luis Ramirez joins us on the line to talk about the activity. Welcome, Luis.
Hi, Susan.
Say, how are things proceeding?
Well, almost daily we've been seeing raids. We've been seeing various operations going on in relation to both the Brussels and the Paris attacks. And, the latest is that three people who were detained in relation to one of those attacks that were detained on Tuesday were held for questioning regarding their involvement in the lease of a house where the attacks are believed to have been planned. That's in a suburb of Brussels called Uccle. They were held overnight until Wednesday. On Wednesday, the judge made a determination that there is not enough evidence for them to be charged, and so they have been released.
Are there concerns about the handling of detainees in this case?
There have been a number of questions on the part of citizens in Belgium and in France who have heavily criticized Belgian authorities for their lack of communication, for their lack of coordination, and for what is seen as an uncoordinated approach to investigating these attacks. The situation in Belgium is one in which you have a number of police agencies that security analysts say in some cases are not communicating with each other. But the justice minister and others in the government have repeatedly said now is not the time to be criticizing. It's time to carry out the investigations, find out what happened, and prevent it from happening again.
Is there any confidence that that is happening?
Certainly the fact that operations are underway and are happening daily is of some reassurance to people, but certainly when they're seeing suspects being arrested, being detained, questioned, and then released, that raises more questions as to whether it's happening competently or not. In any case, what people really want to see is for measures that will ensure that this does not happen again.
Has there been any talk about an international effort in Europe to help control this situation?
From the very beginning, interior ministers, others in the European Union put their heads together, started to have meetings to discuss how to support Belgium, both in the short term, that is, to aid in the investigations, to send personnel to offer advice, training, and also long term, perhaps a revamping of the security system in Belgium. Given its very unique situation, they have the highest percentage, the highest ratio of foreign of fighters designated as foreign terrorist fighters living in Brussels alone, and so quite a big situation on their hands. And the question has been how do these EU nations provide the assistance, both advisory, technical, and financial, to help Belgium revamp its security system.
Well, thank you very much, Luis.
Thank you, Susan.
Time for a look at what's going on the web today, and joining me with details is social media reporter Andrew Palchevsky. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Oh, it's nice to have you here. We could talk like this all day. You wouldn't have time for your 2 minutes of social media news.
Well, I better get to it then.
Okay.
We'll start with somebody who is often trending on social media, Donald Trump. He had a town hall last night on CNN and talked a little bit about Twitter. And his wife, Melania, also saying that they don't let their young 10-year-old son on Twitter. She wishes she could control her husband like that, but she can't on Twitter. He kind of shoots from the hip on Twitter, but he called it enjoyable and a great asset said it's a great way to reach out to people all over the country. And he also said it was genius, just having this social network and the ability to communicate with people, not just in the U.S., but around the world. So high praise for him for Twitter. Of course, he has about 7.5 million Twitter followers. So he's
it's a few more than I have.
A little more than I have, too. But, you know, he's doing quite well with it on Twitter, sometimes causing controversy. But I think he would embrace that maybe in kind of runs with it sometimes. And then we go from politics and social media to someone in social media acting like a politician. And this is CEO Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook. He just gave a keynote address laying out his 10-year vision for Facebook. And people saying it was very much like a political stump speech. He's talking about things like artificial intelligence, virtual reality. They've just released a camera that allows people to take 360-degree video. So you can do kind of the virtual reality headset and look around you and view that video on Facebook. But he's got big plans for the expansion of the site into messaging, into, as we've talked about on the show before, using chatbots so people can make customer service reservations. They can do banking through Facebook. He really wants to make this kind of a one-stop digital shop for everything.
It sounds like a great commercial move.
I think so. I mean, he's done quite well for himself so far, multi-billion dollar company. So I think this is his way of trying to expand that and grow the business. But like I said, a lot of people saying, wow, that sounds a lot like a political speech saying we're going to do this. This is my guaranteeing. This is my platform that I'm laying out.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you.
This is VOA. This is Science in a Minute.
Back in January, astronomers at the California Institute of Technology generated a lot of excitement when they said they found evidence of a giant planet they called Planet 9 in the far reaches of the solar system. Now, astrophysicists at Switzerland's University of Bern have created a computer model that provides additional insight into the mysterious Planet 9. They say their model allows them to assume that Planet 9 is an ice giant planet, smaller than Uranus and Neptune, and surrounded with a blanket of hydrogen and helium. They agree that the planet has 10 times the mass of Earth, that its radius is about 45,000 kilometers, and that it has a temperature of about minus 226 degrees Celsius. The scientists say that because its hot core is cooling, Planet 9 is as relatively warm as it is. If the core were completely cool, its temperature would be lower still. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Proximity talks on Syria's political future resumed today in Geneva with members of the opposition High Negotiations Committee. The meeting is aimed at ending more than 5 years of civil war. The key obstacle is the future of President Bashar al-Assad. It comes amid growing concerns about renewed fighting that could jeopardize a six-week-old cessation of hostilities. Ahead of the talks, UN envoy Stefan de Mistura met with Syrian leaders in Damascus Monday and Iranian authorities in Tehran Tuesday.
And we agreed that what is very important is that cessation of hostilities continues, that humanitarian aid reaches every Syrian, in particular, of course, those areas besieged, but every Syrian. And three, that the political process leading to a political transition is now crucially urgent. And I think it's very important for me to consult the Iranian authorities, because they do have an influence, and they've been giving me, in particular, very much advice, which I've been using and will be continued to use in the future talks.
The government delegation is due in Geneva later this week. U.S. UN Ambassador Samantha Power told reporters Tuesday she believes the ceasefire is slipping and the environment for the proximity talks in Geneva has become more fragile. She expressed alarm at the prospect of a government offensive to retake the northern city of Aleppo. Another cause for tension has been the parliamentary elections held Wednesday in areas controlled by the government. The opposition has called the vote illegitimate and provocative. Regional analyst Heba El-Shazli of George Mason University in Virginia told VOA's Victor Beatty she is skeptical of the government's motive.
When you look at the tactics of this regime, you look at a regime that is definitely trying to stay in power, using every possible opportunity to delay, to gain time, every possible sort of diversion, if you will, in order to find its place and regain any kind of momentum it feels it's lost. This is not a regime or a person in Bashar al-Assad who's going to someday sort of wake up and smell the coffee and realize that the game is over and that he needs to, for his people's sake, to step down. He doesn't think that way.
The U.S. U.N. Ambassador Samantha Power on Tuesday said at the U.N., right now there are signs referring to the ceasefire that this is slipping and it's much more delicate environment for the UN envoy, Stefan de Mistura, to convene political talks. Is the ceasefire slipping, in your view?
It seems that way, unfortunately, because really who is going to be suffering? It's the people.
In Geneva, the second round of these so-called political transition talks is supposed to get underway this week. What are the prospects of success, in your view?
I think they'll take place. Now, success is how you define it. You know, when you come to negotiations, you come to the table, you have to have something called goodwill. There is not always goodwill at that table in Geneva, and I don't believe that the regime is a representative of what we consider to be goodwill.
Foreign policy analyst Jonathan Adelman said the talks in Geneva reconvene as Russian and Iranian-backed government forces continue to rack up battlefield successes and may be preparing an assault on the northern city of Aleppo.
That has at least some hope that eventually there will be an end to this civil war, because then the Russian-led forces, Bashar Assad, will have Latakia, they will have Aleppo, they will have Damascus, the three cities that they really want.
Well, how important then is the battle for Aleppo that seems to be building?
Critical. Absolutely critical. And, you know, as a Westerner, I hate to wish the Russians well, but the situation has just been so horrible for so long. What I get, as somebody who has studied Russia since the 1970s, is that Vladimir Putin obviously is very capable of being deceitful and doing a number of bad things, but I think the fact that he has withdrawn a substantial number of his planes and that he has also made very broad hints that he wants to get rid of Bashar Assad suggests to me that the Russians want to win. They then want to set up a new kind of government on the parts of the territory that they've been helping with. And from their point of view, that's enough.
The next round of political transition talks is supposed to get underway this week in Geneva. UN envoy Stefan de Mistura says he's looking for quite concrete results. Is that overly optimistic?
The results that he wants are overly optimistic, but we wish him the best. I mean, he clearly wants to work towards, you know, a ceasefire that is permanent, to figuring out what Syria will look like afterwards. The Russians, on the other hand, want to win in Aleppo. They want to consolidate their hold on Palmyra, where they are right now, and maybe push up a little bit more towards some linkage with the friendly Kurds. So I wish him well. I think the situation is almost incredibly out of hand. But what we want, I think what we all want to see, is some kind of negotiated settlement, which will not be perfect, but which will put an end to this butchery of innocent civilians.
De Mistura says he is looking for results on a political transition that are quite concrete. While the opposition demands Mr. Assad step down from power, the Syrian leader has said a future Syrian government must include members of the opposition, independents, and loyalists to the regime. Coming up on International Edition, a look at trade issues and Fifth Harmony's new single, Work From Home. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, having just returned from the Middle East and Asia, defended two free trade agreements that have become part of the narrative during this U.S. presidential election season. Speaking in Los Angeles, Kerry acknowledged, despite what he called the overwhelming advantages Americans will enjoy with free trade agreements, there are those who feel a sense of anxiety about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Trans-Atlantic Trade and Investment Partnership agreements.
They've been revved up to have some anxiety about anything related to trade. Now, some of that trust, unfortunately, comes from politicians who play to fears. It also comes from legitimate anger about the economic status of millions of our fellow citizens who have not gained through trade And frankly, I understand that anger. For many Americans, free trade is seen as a proxy for the underlying and disruptive forces reshaping the global economy. Forces like the evolution of new technologies, the increased mobility of labor and capital, and the accelerated pace of travel. Put these forces all together and they spell globalization. Now, these developments are unsettling to a lot of people. For many, the shifts of recent years have produced uncertainty about the future, and among some, even a fear of anything new, anything foreign, or anything that might further expedite change.
He said commentators and politicians on both sides of the political spectrum fan flames and tap into the fear created by misinformation about such agreements. But he argued lost jobs and lower wages would probably occur at a faster rate without such agreements. And he warned against a return to the trade protectionism and high tariffs of the 1930s. Gary Huffbauer of the Washington-based Peterson Institute for International Economics says he is moderately surprised. Excuse me, trade pacts would become a campaign issue.
From a U.S. standpoint, the TPP is nothing but good news. Other countries lower their barriers much more than we do. Our barriers aren't very high. They adopt U.S. rules in a lot of areas like e-com, data flows, state-owned enterprises, investment rules. Oh, my goodness, it's a great agreement, but there's a lot of anxiety and fear about international trade, and obviously the leading candidates have tapped into that, and they've hammered the TPP.
What is the root cause of the anxiety?
The root cause is that we've had slow wage growth, I should be more precise, slow median household income growth for about 10 years. It's not zero, but it's only about a half to three-quarters of a percent a year, and that's too little to notice. And that's the root cause. And then people fixate on the world economy, imports, investment, whatever, as the cause for that, which it's not. But, and we have any amount of research that demonstrates that's not where the problem lies. But that's been the fixation, kind of blame the foreigner. And that's what's happening in this campaign.
Is protectionism a growing problem in the world?
Well, absolutely it is. I've been crying this theme for about 5 years now, and I'm just delighted that the IMF, this very powerful institution, has finally picked up on reality. I mean, the statement that Lagarde made was the first time in many years that I've seen the IMF actually telling it like it is. I mean, using Trump's kind of language, but on the world economy to tell what's really happening. And she is right, and the IMF is right. We have this big protectionist, anti-foreign, anti-globalization backlash in England, in parts of Europe, obviously here in the United States. And it really is bad news because it tends to repeat what we saw in the 1930s. And if it translates into policy, it will bring us back to the 1930s.
Gary Huffbauer cautioned that were any major economic development like the defeat of the TPP in Congress or Britain's exit from the European Union take place, the first reaction will be a huge drop in global markets. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
He comes around and he checks out everybody, makes sure everybody's all right, brings down supplies.
That's Todd Hoddle, who's homeless, talking about Brett Feldman, a physician assistant who delivers first-line medical care to people living on the streets of Allentown, Pennsylvania. It's one of 60 such programs in the United States.
The whole movement has been gaining steam.
Street medicine helps to cut costs, says Dr. Brian Nestor of the Lehigh Valley Health Network, Feldman's employer.
It seems to be keeping those crises down, so they won't have to come into the hospital, where it'll cost us in multiple times more.
Bridget Hammerstone is a recovering drug addict.
Someone like Brett is a blessing to me because he opens the door to allowing the light in for the first time in life, and it's real special.
Yeah. Very good.
I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
The musical group Fifth Harmony has a new album coming out with a new single, and to tell us all about it is Larry London of Border Crossings. Welcome, Larry.
Well, thank you, Susan. Yes, Fifth Harmony are coming out with their second album within 1 year.
Wow.
And that's kind of unusual, but they have been recording and writing and producing lots and lots of music. So the first album, Reflections, came out last year. And now we're waiting for the second album. May 27th is the release date. The new album is called 727, which, interestingly enough, is the day they were discovered on The X Factor.
Oh, that's neat.
So that's why they decided to call the new album 727. They say this album is going to be a little different for their fans than the first album was, in that it will be more R&B, more hip-hop oriented. They've worked with some hip-hop producers on the new album. The girls keep getting asked the same question, are you breaking up, are you breaking up? And at first they said, well, one day we will. And now, you know, they're saying less of that. They're saying, no, our plan is to stay together, you know, and ride this out. So we'll see how it all works out for Fifth Harmony. But very talented young ladies, and I have had them on my show several times.
Oh.
They're a pleasure to talk to. They're a lot of fun. And in a day and age where, you know, it seems that female artists reign supreme, they've got a lot going for them. They've got a huge fan group, which is called the Harmonizers. That's what their fan club's known as. And I think the new album will be good, 727. You don't gotta go to work, but you gotta go to work. You don't gotta go to work. Let my body do the work.
You're going to place this one new single anywhere, the Work From Home?
Yeah, you know, the interesting story behind the new single for them was that they were going to call it Work. But they decided that Rihanna's song Work would confuse the fans and confuse the audience because Rihanna's Work has been number one now for 6 weeks.
Right.
And so they changed the name of it to Work From Home. So it'd give it a
I like
a
it.
Twist.
I think it's cute.
Yeah, and I think we should do more of that.
Okay. Well, Larry, remind our listeners where they can find you.
Well, thank you, Susan. Fifth Harmony can be found around the world, and Larry London can be found on Border Crossings. You can find me several places. You can go to the voanews.com website and search Larry London. It'll probably show you where I am. The name of the show is Border Crossings. Or you can go to facebook.com/VOA Larry London.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Larry.
Thank you.
If you would like to listen to today's program again, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab and scroll to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
22 years ago, one of the worst crimes against humanity in the 20th century occurred in Rwanda. More than 800,000 men, women, and children were systematically murdered during 100 days of unspeakable violence. The killings, deliberately planned and sanctioned by the ethnic Hutu-led government, began in earnest April 7, 1994. The day after a plane carrying the presidents of Rwanda and Burundi was shot down, killing both leaders. Ethnic Tutsi citizens, a minority in the country's population of about 7 million, were specifically targeted. However, politically moderate Hutu and ethnic Twa sympathizers were also killed. We honor not just the victims, said President Barack Obama in a written statement delivered on the commemoration of the 22nd anniversary of the genocide, but also those who risked their lives to save others, as well as the survivors who carry the memories of these atrocities. It is important to mark these occasions in order to remind ourselves, said President Obama, of our common humanity and shared commitment to protecting civilians and ensuring that mass atrocities of this magnitude never happen again. Over the last two decades, Rwanda has made progress in moving beyond these horrible crimes and in building a more peaceful and prosperous future for its citizens. The United States remains deeply committed to preventing the horror of mass atrocities and genocide from occurring again, and to continuing to work with the people of Rwanda and the international community to finish the task of bringing those responsible for those heinous acts to justice.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.